Support for this program comes from Jazz on the Tube, the Internet's largest collection of free streamable classic jazz videos. From Miles Davis to Louis Armstrong, from Thelonious Monk to Duke Ellington, you'll find it all on jazzonthetube.com. Start your free subscription today.
Hi, this is Ken McCarthy, and welcome to the Jazz on the Tube podcast. This is where we'd like to talk with people who love jazz and are doing things to help keep jazz alive. And today we've got a very interesting guest. I'm thrilled to be talking with her for a variety of reasons, and you'll find out what those reasons are very soon. Her name is Eve Zani, and she is an author, among other things, and we're going to focus on her latest books that have just come out, but we're also going to talk about her life in jazz and some of the fascinating things that she's done and been a part of, and it's a lot of stuff. Welcome, Eve.
Hey, Ken. Thank you for having me.
Hey, let's get straight to the books, and then we're going to talk about some other things as well. But as a prelude, I want to tell a story that I've told a number of times, and I'm going to continue to tell it forever. Years ago, I had my nephew over the house. He was so young, he didn't know how to tell time, and he didn't know the difference between today and yesterday. So that could be 2 years old, 3 years old. I'm not exactly sure how old he was, but he was a young un. And I was watching a video of Machito, and then I was watching a video of Anita O'Day, and he was transfixed. He absolutely found these things to be the most fascinating things he ever had seen. And he's kind of a most young. Yeah, right. And most young kids, he's bouncing off the walls most of the time. But he literally stopped in his tracks, and he was just transfixed. And, you know, no one needed to give him a history lesson on jazz. No one needed to tell him it's America's classical music and he should take it seriously. It was just right in him to love it. And I think there's a lot of children out there, maybe not all of them, maybe, but I bet there's a lot of them that if they were exposed to jazz, they would love it too. But unfortunately, if they're not exposed to it, they're never going to get the chance. So that's why when I saw Eve, I was thrilled to the bone. So Eve, would you introduce this work that you're doing?
Sure. Well, first of all, my big disclaimer is I am a singer, first and foremost.
Right, right.
With a huge passion, and it's all come from there. I'm a little apologetic of presenting myself as an author, but I am an author, and I've actually been writing my entire life. Song lyrics, articles, poems, you know. So anyway, that's my big disclaimer. But as someone I feel that can step out of the music, because I come from inside the music, I feel like I discovered that people wanted to listen to me and got excited and somehow caught my delirious passion for jazz. As your nephew?
My nephew, yeah.
Or your son?
My nephew.
Your nephew,
yep.
Yeah. I believe that's just a perfect story and a real natural progression of this music, which is a freedom music, an inclusive music, a music that just rips down the walls and the blocks and the things that separate us, because I really believe the power of the story, and I write this in my introduction, it's an ancestral tone that everyone can relate to. When you, as Prez would say, what's your story? You know, I don't care all the fancy notes and the beautiful execution and the gorgeous tone and the planned presentation, but what's your story? And Billie Holiday, another one of my great heroes, said the same thing. You know, if it's not true, don't sing it. Of course, that was not her exact That's not an exact quote. But so much power in that. And you and I had, I sent you a little article about an event that was held at the ultra-modern St. Peter's Lutheran Church in Midtown Manhattan on Lexington Avenue. This was a conservative, middle-of-the-road Lutheran church for many years, but they had a jazz pastor there, an orphan from Puerto Rico, who fell in love with jazz, who moved to New York and was taken in by a lovely Pennsylvania family who raised him. But he discovered jazz and became kind of a renegade minister to the night people. And Duke Ellington wrote a piece for him called The Shepherd Who Watches Over the Night Flock, John Garcia Gensel. Anyway, together, he was actually a good friend of Lester Young and was with them in his last days. Anyway, he and Willie Jones, the drummer, a drummer who played with Prez, played with Bird, an educator, they started this church service every year, this small event. Every year it would gather more people. Phil Schaap can tell you a whole lot more about it since he's such an incredible historian. He was there, I'm sure, at most of them. Family members of the Young family would come. People would come to honor him right around the day he died, which was March 15th, 1959. Oddly enough, Charlie Parker died on March 12th, a different year, of course. And Prez and Bird were both born 2 days apart. Prez was born on August 27th, and Bird was born August 29th. So in New York, we're so blessed to have KCR, WKCR, which has the Bird and Prez birthday broadcast every year, just in case you didn't know about that, people. It's amazing just to come home or turn on your radio, WKCR, and nothing but Bird and Prez, either or together even, a few recordings of those, JTP, you know, for 3 full days. It's heaven. So they had this event, and anyway, discovered the church and met the pastor. I was looking for gigs, young singer, just moved to New York, and he said, oh, yeah, great. Well, what kind of songs do you like to sing? I said, well, I've written some lyrics to some Lester Young. Stop right there. Next week we're having the Lester Young celebration on Sunday. You must come and sing some of your songs. Wow. A Lester Young celebration? I couldn't believe it. I guess to me, Lester Young has been so symbolic of a hero, you know, to me. Someone who was a quiet hero, who was a round the back door and in like smoke through your soul kind of hero, not an in-your-face, you know, type person. And just his innovation with music, obviously, to me, Prez was the first to erase the bar lines, and his phrasing and the rhythmic forward motion of his work did not rely on landing strongly on one, you know, on the first beat or the obvious places. He set up a whole different, really a modern art concept. Anyhow, I'm crazy about Prez. So I came to the event, and there were all these wonderful older people with stories to tell. And they would get up and they would share memories of Prez. It was like he united so many people in what the things that I had just mentioned that I value about him. It was just enchanting. So I did. I waited for hours. These events would go on way past when they should. And finally, my band had to leave for other gigs. So I wound up singing one of my lyrics to Blue Lester a cappella. And when I came down off the stage, someone I knew grabbed me and said, "Max was tapping his foot." I looked over. There was elegant Max Roach. I just remember he had on some kind of really fly white shoes. I just glanced around. He smiled and nodded at me. I just thought, I mean, I didn't see that foot, but imagine it was a masterful foot tap, hopefully. Anyway, that was a big, huge compliment. So every year.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I became finding that community was, you know, like the little match girl, you know, lands in the Bahamas on a luxury yacht. You know, it was just, wow. It was like a family to me for a number of years. But anyway, as time went on, the jazz ministry through Pastor Gensel had more and more, it was more getting more well-known. He would help musicians in need. There were even a lot of homeless people that would come and hang out, and they mixed in with the jazz people and the elegant, titled jazz fans and the, you know, from the sublime to the scraggly. It was this incredible community. And that's something for me that is also a part of this and something I'm very dedicated to, building community. So that's all a big part of this. As when Pastor Gensel was coming, you know, was aging, he was getting a lot of conflict from the church itself because they have their rent to pay and their budgets to keep, and the jazz ministry seemed to be more of a financial drain than anything else. So there was a imminent threat that it would be ending, or it would be moved, or it would be discontinued. This was horrifying to me. So that's when I got the idea. I said, well, why don't we, they have one big fundraiser per year, Ken. That's All Night Soul, where all night, all kinds of people would, Billy Taylor, you know, all kinds of amazing people just loved the church, loved Pastor Gensel. Oh, by the way, Pastor Gensel was a very close friend of Duke, and he was close to their whole family, to Ruth, and everybody was a part of this jazz ministry. I mean, I even met Ed Nicholas there from the Nicholas Brothers. I mean, I met, you know, all these elders. And the best part was backstage around Billy Strayhorn's piano, which was in the living room of the church behind the sanctuary. Oh, my God, if you could come with me and be a fly on that wall and hear, you know, the stories of, you know, people hadn't getting together in jazz who hadn't seen each other in so many years. And it was all inspired by Lester Young. That's what they came out for. And somehow this feeling that he is still emanating to us, you know, if that is proper language, over all the space and time.
Yeah, he surely lives on. And you make the point in an article that you wrote for Local 802 that he really was the bridge between the ancestral link connecting basically all of jazz, because, you know, he began in the swing era, Kansas City jazz, but he created such, his artistry was at such a high level that the beboppers all studied him. Because what he was doing was so sophisticated. It never gets old. It always sounds ultra-modern. Nobody's ever surpassed him. Not that jazz is a competition, but you really can't. Nobody's ever gone beyond Lester Young, which is really remarkable considering the era that he lived in. So you got involved in actually running this event, right?
Yeah. Pastor Gensel was famous for, if you asked him a question, all of a sudden you were doing a job that you hadn't signed up for, and that's what happened. I said, at that terrible point where the church began to have meetings with this kind of super corporate group, you know, to correct their financial issues and, you know, to go forward in a different way. He was really scared that it was all going to end. So he liked that idea. I said, why don't we have a second fundraiser? And I, who know nothing about promotion or publicity, I said, we're going to, you know, I'm going to rectify that. I'm going to get help. And so we did. We had a huge fundraiser. And it was a few very successful years with people lined up around the block and Don Byron headlining. And, I mean, it was just the roster of performances and people sharing reflections of prayers from Billy Taylor, Barry Harris, Norman Simmons. You know, the list goes on and on. Mohawk was there, Ted Nugent in the early years. You know, people that actually had been witnesses and played with him and had funny stories and some kind of blue stories and, and all that. Yeah, it was incredible. So Pastor Gensel said, I said, well, who's going to, when Willie Jones passed away, I said, what's going to happen now? He said, you're going to organize this. I mean, I couldn't organize my bank account, obviously, let alone this big event. But it kind of organized itself because of the love that people had for Pastor Gensel, for Prez, for the traditions. And, you know, it began to happen. And it was, I think I organized it for 6 or 7 years. But before that, I would help, you know, Pastor Gensel and Willie Jones. Then Pastor Gensel passed away, and they went on in a new direction. They decided it wasn't, I don't know, fruitful to just honor Prez. Why don't we honor a different jazz great every year? And I think they're doing that, but I haven't been mm-hmm. drawn there for some reason. I just the programming hasn't jumped out at me as, of course, I guess I'm nostalgic for the power of this event to bring people together. And also, I have this very deep sense of honor and kind of empathy for older people. I saw my own father in his 90s still playing music and had no one to play with and no one to talk to about his road stories. And anyone that was able to play was gone. And, you know, it just seems upside down somehow. You know, these are the people that gave us life, and it seems like they should be allowed a platform, a community place to see their peers or others in the music tribe, you know, and that their stories should be heard and honored. So that's a big thing for me for some reason.
Well, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, if we love the music and we care about it and we want to see it continue and thrive, you know, it makes sense to keep everybody involved, especially while they're still alive and still playing and still have recollections. Hey, I have a question for you. Do you know if any of these events were recorded?
Oh, they all were. I've got stacks of videos. I even have, what are they called? ADATs?
Okay.
Yes. They were archived for the church. And
oh, that's great.
My God. Mm-hmm.
No, go ahead, please. Yeah.
No, I'm just thinking of when I asked Joe Lovano to do a feature on C Melody Sax. To show people that was Prez's first preferred instrument.
Right.
When he switched from drums, I believe he liked the deeper tones of the C melody, but not quite as deep as the tenor. So Joe Lovano, he just burst into the sanctuary a cappella, carrying that C melody and strolling down down the aisles, and everybody was transfixed.
How wonderful.
There were, you know, and then I got different ideas about how to show Prez's relevance. So I got a dear friend. I'm a Latin music. I'm an Irish music fanatic. I'm a Greek music fanatic. But anyway, those are other parts of me. But anyway, I got my dear friend, Jay Rodriguez, and he brought in some of the Jerry Gonzalez guys, and we did a whole The Latin Prez project. It just makes me cry. It makes me cry.
How wonderful. Do you have any of that on tape?
I think we probably do. I mean, just to see these young, he brought in, I know, little Miles Dalto, Jorge Dalto's son, was on piano. You know, these young Latin lions at the time, and they're all, you know, playing polka dots and moonbeams, and, well, Tito Puente's Symphony Sid is, if you haven't heard it, oh my God, check it out. I don't think Tito recorded that many blues, but his arrangement of Symphony Sid is just sublime.
Well, I'm going to ask you, do any of these, is any of this material available online?
That's a great idea. Any promoters, entrepreneurs, publishers out there, we could convert, we could edit, we could really do a wonderful documentation, but just bringing out, you know, certain parts. Anyone out there listening, have treasured music and video, will put it together. Just contact me.
Well, you know,
I've got
well,
it.
You know, we,
the church has some of it. It's unbelievable. You know, I mean, there.
This is something that I'd be interested in, and you know, we have thousands and thousands of subscribers to Jazz on the Tube, and I wouldn't be surprised that a large percentage of them understand the significance of Lester Young and the importance of maintaining these memories, and not just maintaining them, but making them available to new generations and young people and people all over the world who are interested in this music. Because as we said, you said, I've said it, I think anybody that knows the music knows it, Lester is just such a central person. And you made the point, too, he did it quietly. There was no real cult of Lester Young. People just listened to what he did and loved it and wanted to understand it and studied it. And if people don't know, one of Lester's quote students was Charlie Parker. Charlie Parker used to take Lester Young records and play them till he couldn't play them anymore to try to understand. So this is a really central figure, and I think everybody certainly knows the name Lester Young, but he's every bit as important as Louis Armstrong, as Charlie Parker, as John Coltrane, as Duke Ellington, and maybe has not gotten fully recognized in the present age, which brings us to your books.
Yes.
Let's talk about these marvelous. I saw these books and I almost fell over. I was so happy to see them. Tell us about first what they are and how they came into being.
Well, I grew up in a musical family. My father was actually in vaudeville.
Wow.
I was the baby. He was a good bit older. I have a much older brother, but also a political activist family. I'd want to go out and play, but no, we're marching today. It's a civil rights fundraiser for blah, blah, blah. And that was, I don't think I grumbled too much. I did see that there were things. My dad was a blues fanatic. He even hitchhiked and actually got arrested and put on a chain gang for vagrancy when he was wandering around in the Deep South looking for blues and looking for blues recordings. This is in the late 20s.
Wow.
I mean, there's a lot of fascinating stories about my dad.
I mean, that's a whole book. That's a whole book right there.
I know. But I grew up singing, you know, along with, you know, Mississippi John Hurt and Big Bill Brunsey and Howlin' Wolf, you know, as well as Basie Records and Sinatra, you know, but so much good, and classical music and African traditional world musics. But anyway, my dad had a real feeling about the blues, and that was a big part of my childhood. But also, the politic. Here's a 12-year-old, writing blues tunes and just wanting to be out there with my guitar over my back down a dusty road. But I began to see that, there's a difference between a person of color walking down a dusty road because they have to, and a middle class white girl from the San Fernando Valley. I knew there was stuff I had to learn. So getting back to my jazz superheroes, I have a bit of a mission that through the magic of the story, America's narrow-mindedness, Puritanism, can be really upset and shattered when you shoot them in the heart with these true life stories, what these people suffered. I mean, even for me, I've written 8 superhero bios, but I was in a classroom, in music classrooms, as a teaching artist, all over New York City, every kind of neighborhood, and then I was permanent in one school for 10 years. But I saw that different things about these human stories would connect to people. And then all those prejudices would just fall away. Like talking about Ella, and her tumultuous early life and how she felt getting up at, the Harlem Opera House? People say it's the Apollo, but Charles Linton, who quote unquote discovered her and brought her to Chick Webb. I met him. He told me, no, it was actually, I think he said the Harlem Opera House. But anyway, in that historic contest, she's standing there with men's combat boots, several sizes too big, and a dusty old dress. And anyway, the act that gets, she was going to dance, because she was a marvelous dancer. But the act that got on stage before her with these cute little girls with fancy boots and feathers and bows and canes and outfit, they went out to dance. And she looked at herself and went, ugh. So she sang. And that's how her career took off. So every time I've told that story and, read from that book to the kids, I mean, for females, it's like, we know what that feels like. Boom. They're now Ella fans. Through the door of the story. And it's the same for me. Prez and Lady are two of the most revered but most maligned artists because of their drug issues, alcohol, scandals, arrests, and so on. And that's not the person's work. We're not People Magazine here or The Inquirer. We are, if we're good people, we love people and we love culture and advancing the truth in a culture. And the truth is both of these artists had a message that's still desperately needed, and that is, take down the walls of your, prejudices and look behind. I want young people to say, wow, why did these talented artists take drugs? Well, there's reasons. Now we look back and we say, oh, they were self-medicating. Well, why were they self-medicating? And people will laugh that off, too. But they were actually self-medicating because they didn't have access to good health care. Or there's even communities have been breaking down because of...
Well, economic, terrible economic dislocation and, if you don't mind me injecting something
Please.
Here. A lot of people don't realize that after World War II, when they had Levittown and everybody was moving out to the suburbs and everything was booming, two things are a historical fact. Many of those new communities had covenants that banned Afro-Americans from moving into them.
Yes.
And number two, a lot of the jobs that were created by that huge building boom, again, Afro-Americans were explicitly banned from having those jobs. So while one element of the economy and population was able to kind of rise economically with the rising prosperity of America, another that was, you know, they fought in World War II as well, and they came back from the war, and they couldn't move into these nice new communities, and they couldn't get these great construction jobs. And that was kind of the beginning of the growth of these, you know, really overcrowded, what we call ghettos, where there was a shortage of housing. Housing was kept in bad condition by landlords, you know. And so so when people say, well, what was the problem? Well, there's one of the problems.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's important to know. And I think today people obviously have to be educated. Young people, they don't know what was going on 50 years ago or 70 years ago. And it's important for them to know what people had to go through.
It's so important. It's really a kind of etymology that connects, you know, through the ages. For example, everybody says cool, and it means at least 10 different things, and they say that Lester Young was the originator of that expression. But I believe his earliest usage was, it's safe to go in there, it's cool, there aren't some racist, you know, cops or people waiting to, you know, to hurt you or to bar you or to, you know, in some way lower your value on the planet. And this was a constant, you know, it's been a constant atmosphere for people of color in this country. And now more than ever, with, you know, wonderful movements that are simply, in a way, like musical expressions of a cultural need, Black Lives Matter and things that are bringing, you know, just bringing the truth up to the surface, and then we can deal with it. But we first have to speak the truth to begin to negotiate solutions.
Absolutely.
Which is why, children, we need jazz.
Right. And we need your books. Tell us about your two books, the titles and what people can expect from them.
Well, I call them superheroes because when I explain what they were up against and what happened to them, what their lives were like, and I call it America's hidden history, because this was not taught to me, probably not to you, unless you happen to be blessed with a family of activists like I was, and I knew about these things early. That's why I feel like I, you know, have the responsibility to say, you know, what happened. But so I talk about their superpowers. Singing or playing. In Lady's case, I talk about her amazing superpower to convey feeling. As, you know, in addition to her marvelous sound and phrasing and all of that. But with Prez, I mean, there are people who played faster or people who, you know, executed notes better, perhaps. But again, he conveyed feeling. He, as I said, erased the bar lines, had, you know, nobody knew where his concepts came from. That's still kind of a mystery, actually. But I talk about his mentors, and I give listening examples in the story. I've noticed, as far as music education goes, I had to write these books because nothing existed in their place. Winton has a wonderful jazz curriculum that was in the schools, but all my kind of middle-of-the-road, not jazz music teachers that I knew, I go to many conferences and groups, they did, after I had been advising or sort of translating Winton's wonderful work to those people, I realized there's really a big need here for me to do something that they can also jump into. And I realized that a lot of teachers are afraid of jazz. A lot of music teachers are afraid of jazz. They don't, there's a missing link there between just hearing it and doing it. They can hear it. They can put on recordings and smile at the kids, but they don't know how to link them to the music. I discovered the story is the link.
Mm-hmm.
So telling these stories of what happened to them, walking in their, you know, those miles in those moccasins with Prez, with Lady, with the other jazz heroes I write about, any teacher, any parent, any big brother, any big sister, any aunt, uncle, grandparent, they can read these stories. And then they can press play, and you can hear the real voices. It was easy to put links, YouTube links. So you're talking about Prez. Next thing you do is, you know, here's Lester Leaps In. Whoa. You know, here's Blue Lester. Whoa. You know, and so on and so forth. So I figured out that the link was the story, because I also saw this teaching about other people, even Beethoven. Kids would hear, you know, okay, well, it's kind of fun. But when they heard about Beethoven's life and what he went through, that was it. All of a sudden, they heard the music. And this is what I've seen in jazz. So there you've got your missing link. It's a story. The classroom teachers can read the story. Then when the kids hear the music, they know that Lester Young even faced death, the fear of harm and death in his childhood when he was traveling with his father's circus band and, you know, all the siblings and stepmother and father played this marvelous music. I wish we could hear it all through their childhood. And they faced, you know, they were chased by racists who wanted to hurt them. Imagine children, imagine your child or my child, you know, going through that. Anyway, so this is the kind of thing that, yeah, this kind of opens people's ears, because we're in a visual culture now. What people call music, sometimes I look at the videos and I'm like, okay, well, performance art, yes. Music, not so much. I think the visual, we kind of have to turn inward to hear music and not go outward with the eyes, but to hear with the heart, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I really am sort of on a mission, I guess. I want to upset the apple cart of prejudice and classifying people and into, you know, drug users, abusers, or whatever, you know, so they can hear the story.
Well, you know, when we talk about Mozart or Beethoven or Bach or Schubert or any of these guys, you know, we're aware that they might have had, you know, quirks, but we're spending 99.99999% of our time listening and appreciating the music. We're not endlessly rehashing their personal failings, you know, as human beings. And I think, you know, we should afford the same dignity to these great artists. It's important to know their lives, obviously. It's important to understand that what they had to go up against to create this art, but we should give them the same respect that we give our classical composers.
That is so beautifully said, Ken. I have to give you a big applause. Really, that was beautifully said, and I want to, being a bear of little brain this morning, like Winnie the Pooh, I want to remember.
Well, it's on tape.
What you just said, it was really, really exactly. Yeah, it's a curious contradiction, and luckily, wonderfully, miraculously, a lot of the things that are going on today are producing a lot of important understanding and acknowledgement of those contradictions. And that's where we got to start, you know, these conversations.
Now, these books are written with the child in mind, K through 12, ages 5 through 18. No, that's how they That's how they classified the booksellers.
Yeah, I really couldn't figure out how to classify them because there's, for example, teaching might have been Mozart. There are some wonderful books about the same size as mine that come with a CD, a classical music series from Canada that has sort of, not really a story form, but just a kind of chronology of the classical musician and the music. And so you don't have a lot of guidance, but, you know, we music teachers are very creative. So, in other words, if I was telling Billie Holiday's story, all of my, you know, I would really tailor it down and leave out, I really talk about lynching in the part of Lady's story about how courageous it was for her to sing Strange Fruit and what that did. It actually accelerated her persecution because it made her high profile, and mm-hmm. how dare she get so uppity and wear her elegant furs and get up there and sing this song about lynching. That really, you know, accelerated the move to incarcerate her and degrade her and all that. So back to your question, I can do a great presentation by picking and choosing from my books. Of course, I'll teach the little ones my twinkle. Lady Day, she paid some dues. Her whole life was like the blues. So much feeling in her song. Sassy, classy, sweet and strong. Lady Day, she paid some dues. Her whole life was like the blues. So, you know, I would dip into that, something like that, and
nice.
And teach them, you know, isolate the overall story. On the other hand, that same manuscript has been used, I think, 3 times now in a friend of mine who teaches writing at Hunter College in her curriculum on sheroes, women heroes. So everything is there. I think it's really, as I explain in my books, these are read aloud. I want to, you know, peers can read together, read aloud, take turns, parents, elders, younger people can read it aloud to their families, and then you put on the listening examples, you hear the real person's voice.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of music material, there is jazz, you know, out there, but it's too expensive for us to use the real tunes, so I can't mm-hmm. sing my, I've written lyrics about Louis Armstrong to On the Sunny Side of the Street, for example, but I'm not allowed to sing that or perform that because I don't have the rights from the estate, and it's very expensive. And I understand.
Right.
I'm grateful for these protections because I'm a composer also, but it comes to down to a choice. How do you most get people to hear and know and love and understand this music and how it describes our history? So there's music in the style of, or music that sounds like, you know, that we've written. And I've written tons of them myself, tunes to educate that are original, that I don't have to pay. And they're pretty darn good, I have to say. I just finished a blues book with like 10 blues tunes, original, in the style of, you know, Flatfoot Floogie, in the style of, you know, a Delta Blues, or, you know, all that. But it's really important for people to hear the original artist who's bringing all that personal information and experience, you know, to their music. So anyway, so that's why I have these links. And I also have links to the people that inspired our heroes.
Mm-hmm.
So in Lady's case, she always spoke about Louis Armstrong and Bessie Smith. So I have a tune of each of theirs, so you can hear, you know, like a math question. Oh, so add this and this, and you get...
Right, yes, right.
Plus all the, obviously, unknown influences. But that's important, because for me as a musician, I hear somebody I just respond to and love their music. I want to know, who did they listen to? I want to know, you know?
Yeah.
So, anyway.
So the books are called, they're part of the Jazz Superhero series,
yeah.
Jazz Superheroes. And the first one's called Billie Holiday Lady Day.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one, the second one is called Lester Young Prez.
Yes.
And they're illustrated. You've worked with two illustrators?
Yeah, three actually. The portraits on the cover were done by marvelous American artist named Phil Blank, who happened to be a friend of my brother's. He gifted me with these when he heard about the project. I was just blown away. I think they're beautiful and masterful. And then I worked with a young artist in Russia, actually, and I made storyboards of what I wanted to convey. We went back and forth, and this young woman named Masha Somova, my friends, when they looked at the illustration, said, how did she get inside your head? She really heard and felt all the nuance that I suggested, and I think she did an amazing job on both of these. And then I had another artist, a Spanish artist, who wrapped it up and put the graphics together for me, named Kim Karamas in Spain.
Great. And so you've got two already for the public, the one on Prez and one on Billie Holiday. And it looks like you've got some other ones in the works, Ella and Louis Armstrong and Charlie Parker. And who else? I see some other pictures on the cover.
Well, my next two are going to be Valeda Snow, trumpet player, and Louis Armstrong. Valeda left the States on the same show in the late 20s as Josephine Baker.
Uh-huh.
Was it Blackbirds? Might have been Blackbirds. It wasn't Shuffle Along. I think it was Blackbirds. But anyway, I have to look that up. So in the late 20s, she was an incredible sensation. Came from Tennessee, played so many instruments, and conducted the band. When I first began to listen to her, she was scatting, you know, doing vocal syllables instead of words to music. Entire choruses at the time when we just heard, you know, Louis scat right around the same time, you know, just shorter passages. Here was a woman, like I said, you know, with Prez erasing the bar lines, well, she erased the confines of lyrics and was scatting, you know, entire choruses. That caught my attention. Plus, she was a good trumpet player. And the rumors, I've never saw her dance. Actually, she may dance a little, and there may be some footage of her dancing, I'm not sure, in some of the Soundies.
Mm-hmm.
She was electrifying. Apparently, I mean, audiences couldn't decide whether her dancing or singing or trumpet playing or conducting, you know, bands, which was better. I mean, she just was incredible. Anyway, she's also been maligned. She stayed in Europe. People didn't know her that much over here. I mean, I met some musicians that knew her and played with her because of my time at St. Peter's Church and getting to hang out and being an elder statesman groupie as I am and being, you know, a big fan and big listener to the stories of these elders. Sammy Price, the great Texas bluesician, he played with her. My friend Herb Lavelle, the drummer, the rock steady drummer from you know, he's the drummer on many, many big hits, including The Thrill Is Gone, B.B. King. And anyway, I got firsthand interviews, Sarah McLawler, my dear Sarah McLawler, people that knew her. But the word on the street, I spoke to different scholars, they discounted her because they said she'd been involved with drugs. She may have been passing information, as did Josephine Baker during the war, to the Allies. But at some point during World War II, I don't have my notes in front of me, but she was captured by the Nazis.
Wow.
Imprisoned and tortured. And guess what? There were other musicians of color in the camps. Jazz was also under attack.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, well, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The Nazis hated jazz, and they persecuted it. What,
yep.
Can you tell her? Can you tell us her name again for people that don't recognize it?
Valeda Snow. V as in Victor, A as in Apple, I as in Ice Cream, D as in David, A as in Apple, I as in Ice Cream, D as in David, A as in Apple. Was that
great?
Right?
Valeda Snow. Valeda Snow.
She had a brother, had a sister named La Veda, and a sister named Alveda, I believe. Anyway, it was a popular group of sounds in her family. Anyway, she survived and was actually came back to the States and died a few years later on stage. I want to say it, the Paramount, but I don't think it was. She did get to perform at the White House, I think, for Truman? I'm not sure. I have all that in my notes.
Okay, and that book is going to be coming out too. So
yes,
this is really a lot to look forward to. This is a lot to look forward to, and I want to recommend to everybody very strongly: either go to your local bookstore or go to Amazon.
They're not in the bookstores yet, Ken. They're just available in Kindle and paperback on Amazon.com. Just look up. Jazz Superheroes, or go to my website, evesani.com. That just brings you to Amazon, though. But you can see other events, things going on.
Great.
Yeah.
So to follow this work and to follow Eve, go to evesani.com. That's Eve, EveZanni.com. You can learn more about the books. You can order the books. You know, get the books for yourself, but if you have children in your life, whether your own kids or grandkids or nieces and nephews, or even the library, your local library. These are really, I think, must reading for all children to learn about these great artists and learn about the lives they've lived. And Eve, we clearly have a lot to talk about in the future. I'm really interested in this Lester Young material and maybe helping put some of it online so that people all over the world can see it. And thanks. And thank you. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for creating these wonderful books. It's hard to believe that something like this did not already exist, but it didn't, and now it does. So we thank you very much. And I'm really serious, everybody. You know, go on to Amazon, go to Eve's site. You're going to want these books. You're going to want to spread them around to people you love. I can't wait to get them for my nephews. And Eve, we've been talking with Eve Zanni on the Jazz on the Tube podcast. And everybody, come on back next week, and we're going to be doing more interesting conversation.
Thanks, Ken. Peace be with you.
We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please share it. That's how we grow. And remember to subscribe to jazzonthetube.com, the internet's largest collection of free, streamable, classic jazz videos.